This is The Mary Davis Show, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with interviews, news, special features, and the community calendar. Now, here is your host, Mary Davis.
Good morning and welcome. I'm your host, Mary Davis, and the show, of course, is The Mary Davis Show. And, of course, we've got interesting guests. One guest is returning on the radio portion of The Mary Davis Show. She's also been with me on TV as well. And another is an old familiar voice, author, playwright, and everything else I can think of, educator, and that's Gary Earl Ross. And he's returning many times in front of this microphone and in front of the camera. He's been with me a lot and always glad to have him. And we will have another guest who will be joining us hopefully soon. And so here we go. This morning, we're going to be talking about what everybody is talking about, of course, and continuing to talk about, and in some communities still. And that's, of course, what has happened in South Carolina. And we have quite a few issues right here in Buffalo. And one of our guests, Ms. Hemphill, Veronica Hemphill Nichols, is going to be talking about some things that are happening, particularly in the fruit belt of Buffalo. She has been very active. You might remember that name because she did run against Crystal People Stokes in the last state Senate race. Oh, no, state assembly race. Uh-huh. And she did very, very well. And I often tell people that, you know, Crystal People Stokes had a lot of, had much more money. But I thought that when I first met Ronnie and she was running, I was very impressed with her because I thought that any woman that could stand up to UB and EC, not ECMC, but Buffalo General Hospital,
yes,
as well as, what's his name, Pastor, what name, at the Friendship? Oh. No, at St. John's?
Oh, you're talking about Chapman.
Chapman. Yes. I said, this lady must have a lot on the ball because she single-handedly just about saved those people's homes in Pilgrim Village, I guess.
It's McCarley Gardens.
McCarley Gardens, yeah. Who are about to get evicted, you know, just have their property just taken right out from under them with the collusion of all those three of those entities that I just named. And I was very, very impressed with her at that first time. I said, well, I got to bring her on my show. And she's been with me twice. I'm happy to have. And Gary, whom I'm always impressed with, he knows so much and doesn't mind telling everybody what he knows. So that
it's
helps
the
show a
disease.
Lot.
If I don't share what's in my head will explode.
So just to get started, we'll get some of the things out of the way before we get to some of the issues locally that I know Ronnie will lighten us up on. And that is anybody wondering at all what is going on in the Republican Party and Mr. Donald Trump? Now he has, what, $10 billion that he's worth, but nobody's seen this yet, and he's does all this talking. And his problems, I guess, with the Mexican government, whom he says is conspiring to send all of their rubbish across the border into the United States, and what he would do to solve that problem was to build even a bigger, higher fence, probably lynch all of the Mexicans that are running across the border, along with a lot of other South Americans that are running along there with them, and then charge the Mexican government $100,000 a head for those that got through. So this is what we do. And our other third guest is just now arriving, and I will get her situated and start and tell you who she is when she sits down. And this is Miss Sydney Brown, and she is, of course, with the Chamber of Commerce, I think.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
Black Chamber of Commerce. But to get started on that issue, and also, I guess, Whoopi Goldberg is finally turned on, Bill Cosby. My only reason that I was really just mad at Bill Cosby basically was because I thought when he was busy thrashing black people and telling them what they need, he got on my nerves. I wanted him to just shut his mouth, stick to what he did, instead of moralizing about the faults of black young people. You know, it seems to me that black young people had enough people dumping on them and kicking them in the ass. They really didn't need Bill Cosby to add his whatever size he wears, 10, 11, 12 shoe, you know, up their rear ends to boot. And I just had an issue with him. I was really mad about that. And it reminded me something that Bill Cosby did, and that was, the football player, Simpson.
O.J.
Simpson. When he was going through something, I remember someone told me once that there had been a small black charity in New York City that were trying so hard just to get somebody to come and speak to their kids. They ran a kind of like a foster care adoption agency, and they had kids there, and they just wanted to have some sort of celebrity, preferably black, if they could have got somebody, to come there just to speak to their kids. And O.J. Simpson told them, basically, I don't know if these are his words now, but literally what he said was, go to hell. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth Taylor, who was a huge star, came. She went to that little charity. This was Elizabeth Taylor, mm-hmm. and talked to those kids and whatever. And it was, I guess, it was the thrill of a lifetime, because these was just a little small group that mm-hmm. had to. But yet she went. They asked her to come, and she said, "Sure, I'll come and talk to the kids," and she went. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what a difference! And then when his behind got in all that trouble, who had to come yes. and bail his worthless behind out? Was black people. That's who really stood by him, and mm-hmm. that's what he did for them. And this was my same attitude. I'm going to shut him, get off my soapbox. And that's what made me so mad at Cosby.
Yeah.
Although he had crossover audience and whatever he did, but this really got me. You know, you go around and you kick people in the butt, and they might be the very ones that might have to come and help you.
Right. No, that's true. Thing is, it's not even a matter of help in Cosby's case. I remember one. I think it was Jay Farrow from Saturday Night Live, who said, of all the things that Cosby said to people, the thing he remembered the most was the thing he would now say to Cosby, pull your pants back up.
Yeah. And that's what Cosby was saying to all these black young men. That's what he was mm-hmm. saying, basically, mm-hmm. to them.
And I think the issue with Cosby was just, I have to say, I was in junior high school when I Spy premiered, and I was a big fan of spy-fi, the spy genre, mm-hmm. From the movies, TV shows.
Cosby thing.
I loved that time. When I Spy came on, we came to Woodlawn Junior High School the next day, and we all knew who Bill Cosby was mm-hmm. because our parents had his comedy records, and we listened to, you know, Noah, It's the Lord, Noah, and all the other, and they were really mm-hmm. great routines. And then he was on I Spy, and suddenly there was a black man starring in a television show.
In a sitcom.
It wasn't a sitcom. That was I Spy.
Later.
That
mm-hmm.
was, yeah, the sitcoms were later. I Spy was a drama show. It mm-hmm. was an action show, espionage. And it was so cool to see a black person in that position. We mm-hmm. all admired, loved, looked up to Cosby for that. And the revelations that came out were just so heartbreaking. I got a text from my former wife recently when the revelation came mm-hmm. out that his deposition had been released.
These thousand women coming out of the woodwork?
Oh, not just, I mean, the people coming out of the woodwork was, mm-hmm. was heartbreaking. It was, mm-hmm. because I figure if one person makes a charge or two people, you know, you can certainly refute that. What is it up to now? 39?
Last I checked, it was 20.
I think it's up to 39. And if 39 counting. People are charging you with
wow.
something.
I wonder how much Viagra this man was taking.
I think those times were before Viagra.
Yeah.
But I Viagra agree with him. It is when on social media is where I
you can get killed.
Found out about that.
You can get really killed on social media.
Broke
you can really get killed.
My heart when I first mm-hmm. saw it, because I always respected Bill Cosby. And like you said, coming up, you know, my parents had mm-hmm. his records and we followed him. And mm-hmm. one of my favorite ones was the Fat Albert Show. You know, mm-hmm. we
Fat Albert,
that.
Yeah.
And uh-huh. there was always moral basis to it, you
yes.
know. And
he was everybody's favorite dad, I think. With
yes,
the,
exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, he's big on family, mm-hmm. you know, even his stand-up comedies in his mm-hmm. latter years. I mean, I love those things. Mm-hmm. And for this to occur, I can't wrap my brain around it, and it's very difficult for me to even express mm-hmm. what my opinion would be. Mm-hmm. You know, because oftentimes when I look at the media, when we're talking about these different stories, mm-hmm. you know, I always have to say to myself, and I kind of apply the same thing to history, mm-hmm. you know, half of reporting media is hiding the truth.
Yeah.
So for me, I kind of like to take a step back and just wait and see how things play out in order to determine what kind of consensus I would have mm-hmm. as far as with these different issues. But right now, Bill, I just pray it's not true. Mm-hmm. You know, I pray it's not true, but
he confessed in his deposition, and that's the thing. You know,
All he said was that he bought drugs
give to women he wanted to have sex
with. Right, but I got the opinion when the way he was talking, so they knew what they were getting. You know, like they were having a drink. He said, "Here, pop this in your drink. You're gonna feel really good," or something like that.
Right.
Well, there's always a perception when rapists do that sort of thing sometimes. No, it was consensual, without realizing or perhaps justifying it in their own minds what actually took place. And as a mystery writer, I have to say that anytime someone engages in illegal behavior that he does seriously more than three times, we have a word for that.
Yeah, serial.
Mm-hmm. Yes,
and Cosby may turn out to be one of the most
prolific
yes. serial rapists in American history.
But we still can't get the fact we're sitting here around the table now talking about this. And if somebody say Gary pulls out a bottle of champagne or something and says, "Here, we can really have a great conversation. Here's a glass of champagne for you, you know, Ronnie Hemphill Nichols,
just call me Ronnie,
right? And you know, and for you, you know, Sidney Brown, and for you, Mary Davis. But here, try a little this and that, and it's going to really give you a buzz, and your brain is going to explode. You're going to remember all kind of facts and everything else, you know. Yeah. And you say, okay, yeah, put a little in here, and I want to remember all kind of facts.
Yeah,
and I want to remember everything that's going on. To me, that's kind of getting on a slippery sort of slope. If he was telling people up front that he was putting something in their drink, or getting into drinking.
I don't think he did tell them.
No, he didn't tell them. Here, have a cappuccino.
Right. Or
you know,
it's
drink this sort of thing. And Beverly Johnson's statement, and I have to, you know, Beverly Johnson and I went to high school together along Crystal Peoples. We were all in the same class. And when Beverly told her story, it was like she didn't want what it was, but he was saying, "Here, have this." And he's being friendly. And then she realized what he had done and started cussing him out, and he ended up putting her in a cab. The pattern, and this is a matter of pattern crimes are such that it becomes hard for someone to deviate from a pattern that works. A lot of serial killers, and if you, I don't want to get off on too great a tangent there, but if somebody has a pattern of behavior that produces the desired result, he continues that pattern of behavior.
And why did his wife defend him? And what's her name? Crystal? No, her name is...
what is her name?
Carol? Camille. Right. And, you know, because she has certainly, kind of like Hillary Clinton, where she certainly stood by her man.
Right. Yes.
Well, she may not have known.
But she's still doing it.
I mean, I think if
most
of these
women want
about,
her to divorce him or something, I don't think she's about to.
Well, I don't think she is at this point. I mean, with their lateness of age and years that they spent together. Mm-hmm. But a key point to think about is just the hypocritical manner of him setting society up as a whole, that he portrayed a certain image. You know, as you were talking as you talked about him not coming to... a fundraiser for children, and I think about Jell-O pudding. He always had children around him, and as we talk about him being America's dad, he portrayed a persona which made people comfortable around him, so if he was to offer them something, they wouldn't naturally be hesitant.
So
I think he went at great lengths to put on a facade or a mask, as they call it when you talk about someone being
hypocritical. Look how he went after black young men. That's like what Gary was talking about. You know, what his words of advice, him said, you know, Bill should have pulled your pants up. You know, because he went after black young men something fiercely.
Right. Which was needed. I just don't know that he was the right one based on these
I say
new
that
facts.
To my sons. Pull your pants up.
Well, I've said the same thing. And I, as a father of sons and daughters, I have to, you know, I would tell my sons, they're all grown now, pull your pants up, you know? And they have children of their own. And I would, you know, tell my daughters, don't let somebody give you a drink. it's one of those things that, you know, you have talks with your children. I think one of the difficulties of Cosby's approach was not that he didn't say things that should be said. It was the manner in which he said them. He approached people not like someone saying, well, you know, if you want to do blank in your life, you might try looking at approaching something this way. Mm-hmm. No, he came full on get off my lawn guy, you know. and that didn't go well. People saying, like, what are you doing this for? And then if I had engaged in a series of crimes the way he did and had not paid the piper for it, I think I'd just keep a low profile.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you go back to O.J. Simpson, and O.J. Simpson's, oh, I'm going to spend the rest of my life looking for the real murderer on every golf course in America. If you get away with something, you just keep a low profile. It's arrogance that puts people out there. They think they're above the law. They're above consequence. And
you get socked.
Yeah.
I think Bill Cosby did keep a low profile. I mean, my understanding of it is that a comedian in Florida actually just used Cosby in a joke.
Yes.
And someone in the audience, it sparked a nerve. And that's what prompted all this. It wasn't him himself saying something about other people who do illicit sex acts that brought him this light out. But I just say scripture is true. What's done in the dark will eventually come to light when you don't do right.
That's right.
Cosby had not made his public disgust with black life, black culture, etc. If he had not made that known, if he had made no comments, the issue would never have come up for Hannibal Buress to bring it up. So, well, Bill Cosby says that you should do this, that, and the other thing. Well, Bill Cosby, you're a rapist. You can't tell us what to do. Which is essentially what he said. If Bill Cosby had said nothing, nobody would have brought it up anywhere along the line, which is what I mean by a low profile. And the same with O.J. Simpson. You can't have a low profile in this and still remain a public figure because somebody's going to stick a microphone in your face at some point.
Because how would this little charity, how would it have gotten out that he said no to this little charity? And yet Elizabeth Taylor, I mean, she's a megastar. Oh, she's dead now. But a megastar would come out of her way at her own expense and go down to this little group and do this for this little charity.
Yeah, because we're dealing with different kinds of people. And I don't know a whole lot about Elizabeth Taylor, but I suspect
Whatever it was, whatever
there was a level of kindness that showed up, and the kindness I think trumped maybe the arrogance of stardom, and it's a tricky thing when you're a public person and you're trying to Elizabeth Taylor had all the money she needed.
And
truth be told, O.J. Simpson did too
at that particular time.
He could certainly have done something like that. Lots of athletes, various movie stars, they've put themselves in positions where they can do something to help somebody else. Or they'll talk for free somewhere, or they'll give somebody a break on something. Lots of people have done those kinds of things.
I think in Elizabeth Taylor's case, and don't take it as gospel, but she spent a lifetime with physical infirmities. And to me, that can humble you and give you a sense of compassion for other people in their struggles. Because, I mean, she was one of the biggest Michael Jackson advocates. She was there for people. I can't remember, what was it, Rock Hudson when he was dying of AIDS? She was there for him. But I think that all in all, even with all of her money and all of her arrogance, there was a level of compassion that she had because of her own physical limitations.
That could have been true. People are talking quite a bit about our president. I'm just wondering what our panelists here would think.
Oh, Lord, don't get going with that.
That's a loaded question.
We have Miss Sidney Brown here, who is, of course, the secretary for the Black Chamber of Commerce.
Yeah.
And we have, of course, the last person who ran against Crystal People Stokes, we have Ronnie Hemphill Nichols here. And, we have our playwright, author, and educator, Gary Earl Ross. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew who he was talking about. Our president seems to have shed one facade and come out kind of like a grub that grows into this butterfly. sort of thing. You know, it's like a metamorphosis that he's going. This is a Barack Obama that nobody knew. He never talked about race in his first few years.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he didn't go anywhere near anything like working class, and certainly nothing black. He wasn't there.
No, he wasn't.
All at once, this man's gone here this past week. This man has gone to a federal prison, which no president has gone before, is in the words of Star Trek. You know, he's gone somewhere. Well, you know.
Well, what he has done is he has reached the sweet spot.
Or a safe spot. He doesn't have to worry about it.
He doesn't have to worry about re-election.
Right.
Now he has to be concerned about his legacy.
Mm-hmm.
And what he has done, and Obama is a consummate politician. We need to keep that in mind. He really is quite brilliant as a politician.
That must have just come because he only got into politics, 10 or 15 years ago?
No. That's personality. He's one of these people who understood what the limitations he would face would be for a first term, mm-hmm. and then a second term would liberate him to do some things. And mm-hmm. so now, in his second term, Obama is working on building a legacy that mm-hmm. will mark him as a transformational president.
Because I know the left was furious at him, including me. Being
Iran,
a leftist was totally furious at him. What's this guy doing? You know,
he's not saying what we want him to say. And the point is, he wanted to get reelected. Mm-hmm. Now that he's been reelected, he's in the sweet spot. He doesn't have to worry about a campaign ever again. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to worry about satisfying who actually paid for his campaign.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because
mm-hmm.
that's really big. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And he'll probably have some sweet job offers after he leaves the White House.
Right.
Like he needs a job offer. But he now can say, this is what I want to do so that it'll be part of my legacy, that I transform the justice system. I open the door to Cuba, open the door to Iran.
I went to a federal prison.
The
only president in the United States that ever set his foot in a prison.
And uh-huh. issued a lot of pardons recently.
Didn't he? Something he never did in his first term.
Mm-hmm.
He was so stingy with pardons. What did he do? Maybe six in his first term? Is that many?
I don't recall.
He did very, very few. It was so minuscule that you couldn't remember the number.
Because he was smart enough to know from the beginning that as a black man in the White House, mm-hmm. he would be, you know, every president is under a magnifying glass.
Everyone.
Okay? In Obama's case, it was a magnifying glass with a sun lamp behind it.
Behind it, yeah.
Trying to concentrate the beam to burn him.
Mm-hmm.
Everything he did was interpreted, misinterpreted, whatever.
Can you imagine what would have happened if he had been Bill Clinton? And had his little Veronica Leminski thing.
Oh, no. That would have...
Oh, my goodness. Would have impeached him for sure.
Oh, yeah. Yes. He wouldn't have made that second term or finished out the first one.
No. Didn't matter who Michelle came wouldn't in front have of a chance for running either.
Let me tell you, didn't matter who was coming up in front of Obama's face. I mean, she could have been Venus de Milo. You know, the only bed he was interested in being in was Michelle's, and that was it.
And more power to him mm-hmm. and them, and they come across as a couple.
A very loving couple.
Like
they got a very good marriage is what it comes across. Like they got a good marriage.
But he's at that spot now where he can actually do things in his last couple years
mm-hmm.
that
he could have never done.
That he couldn't have thought about doing. Mm-hmm. I mean, he couldn't have opened the door toward Cuba at the very beginning.
And healthcare. Don't forget healthcare.
And healthcare. Well, that's right. No. We his recent Supreme Court decisions, opening the door to Cuba, getting the start of a nuclear deal with Iran.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, these are the things that will mark Obama as moving the country more into the 21st century, away from those people who cling to the notions of the 19th century mm-hmm. as an appropriate way to run the country.
Mm-hmm.
This is say one thing that is a disservice that will be a part of his legacy or is a part of it is he's the only president in his inaugural speech to include gay and lesbians mm-hmm. and also to speak out so strongly.
Mm-hmm.
That will be to a disservice to our nation as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
You look at history and just countries, mm-hmm. when the moral standard drops so low, mm-hmm. judgment is coming.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And so he has weakened us when the key leader or one of the most powerful leaders of the world
mm-hmm.
Speaks and just sanctions such moral depravity, we need to pay attention to the signs.
You do, and I like to just chime in on that, because with the Supreme Court decision, where does it leave Christians in the marketplace as far as...
Not just Christians. Jews are pretty sanctimonious when it comes down to it. And Muslims.
Muslims, you know, as far
rigid,
as protecting
yeah.
them, you know, so that we're not compromising our moral lifestyle and our moral stance when it comes to same-sex unions. Because we know, even before it became a law in all 50 states where they did have it as a law, you can check the new social media where gay couples purposefully, okay, attacked Christian businesses who would not cater to same-sex marriages and literally shut them down. And so there's no protections for them. And so with the president and all that he's done for the liberal, what do you want to, I want to call them, special interest groups, he should have taken into account that that is just a fraction of the entire population of the United States.
And it's a like small fraction.
The only thing that would have, but though, let me bring this up while she's talking to that, Gary. Now, let's get in here. The only thing that ever got me when I'd be talking to gay people was this, particularly gay white people. When they wanted to equate their struggle with what African Americans went
through. Yes, on the backs of
that,
civil rights.
I had a problem with that.
Me too.
And I had often told them, I said, you know, I don't recall ever seeing a picture of, and certainly I had been in the South and I had to use segregated facilities where there were three fountains. One said blacks had to go to this fountain, whites to go this, and homosexuals to that. I never saw anything like that in the South. So, you know, if you weren't telling somebody you were homosexual, you could go to any fountain you wanted. If you were white, you went to the white fountain. And that was the end of that.
Right.
But if you were black or any other color, no, because your color told you where to go. And there was no escaping that. So go ahead, Gary. You want to
get it. I'm going to pose an alternative circumstance here. Let's see. Where shall I start?
From the beginning.
Point
Amen. Beginning God.
let's go back to, well, let's look sociologically first. We'll start with numbers. Gay people have been in existence in the human race.
Forever.
Forever.
Yes.
The numbers have been consistent. They have been... anywhere from 4 to 8% of any given population, usually somewhere around 4 or 5% in any culture, at any point, at any time. Okay, the fact that the numbers are consistent suggests that there's a biological consistency here, that there is something that orients someone. And I will say I have gay friends who tell me they knew. I have a friend, I won't give his name, said he knew when he was 5 years old he was attracted to men or to males. As I knew when I was 5 years old, I was attracted to females. I had my first kiss when I was five. That's a story for another day.
That was probably from mommy.
No, it wasn't from mommy. It was from someone who actually passed away a few years ago, and that broke my heart when she died. But the numbers have indicated that there's a biological basis, number one. Number two, gay people would have probably not pursued marriage if they had not been denied other avenues of expression. I can, for example.
I mean, like the riot in New York City
brought
out gay people at that
time? I'm not even talking about riots and things like that. I'm talking about people who are together. I have some friends, I won't give their names either, two women. They've been together for close to 40 years.
Everybody sitting around this table knows gay people.
Well, exactly. Well, yeah. But I mean, I'm not here to give people's names. If I said my son, one of my sons did blank, I wouldn't tell which son, right? So, these friends of mine, if they should hear this broadcast, they'll know I'm talking about them. They were together for, they've been together for about 40 years at this point. They are now legally married and have been for a while. But in some circumstances, if you have someone who's together for 10, 20 years, and then they end up, and somebody ends up in a hospital, and you have the other person's family denying access.
Well, sure.
That becomes an issue.
Yes.
The people who were opposed to gay marriage made a mistake in not extending all other rights to gay people along the way, because what happened? The numbers matter. One of the things in America is that we all enjoy the same civil rights.
At least now, on paper.
On paper. We're supposed to. Mm-hmm. Now, there's no equivalency between the struggle for gay rights and the struggle for black rights, just as there's no equivalency between the struggle for women's rights and black rights, and there's no equivalency between the struggle for black rights and Native American rights. Mm-hmm. Every struggle has its own peculiar necessities, its own things that are important.
Except some are far worse than others.
And, mm-hmm. and yes. What happens is that the fact that the struggles are not exactly equivalent doesn't erase the validity of a particular struggle. You know, women's rights, women got the right to vote before blacks did. If you want to, you know, raise the truth of the matter.
There was black suffrage, at least for men, right after the, in fact, part of it was right after the Civil War.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Well, see, in 1920,
that was a big issue in the women's struggle, that women
were so
mad about.
When women were given the right to vote, all white women and all men could mm-hmm. vote. Mm-hmm. Black women were still excluded from that, and black men were still excluded from that if they were in various parts of the country. So mm-hmm. when I say mm-hmm. the right for everybody came later. The struggles for equality are not equivalent. They're different. But that doesn't mean that any struggle is less valid.
Well, we're not talking about their struggles being less valid because, mm-hmm. I mean, throughout history we know that
well, let me just say this.
Those who are gay have been
discriminated. The civil rights movement is essentially the grandfather of all struggles for equality. In that sense.
Sure, I can go along with
that.
I'm just saying that there's some things that
it's like, wait a minute. Mm-hmm. We can't say that all people are created equal and then have some people not get blank.
I just want to interject something mm-hmm. based on your premise as far as going back and talking about since the beginning of time, but I'll say it wasn't at the very inception of time. Mm-hmm. You know, sin entered and then there was a consistent decay in society as a whole. But one thing that is different, and we have to be careful of, a slippery slope. People don't talk about a little three-letter word, sin, mm-hmm. and they just equate everything, whether it's drug addiction, sexual mm-hmm. addictions. Everybody, when it says something, it's an addiction, as opposed to realizing that things come down to a choice.
Yes, it does.
When it comes down to homosexuality, people want to say, just like with the alcoholic, there's something predisposed with my genes that's making me do this. I was born that way. And that's just not the truth with it. A person who is Native American does not have a choice with their ethnicity. Same right. thing with the person who's black or a person who gets
that's
diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
They can't say, well, I choose to have diabetes versus not. People, and this is where there's contention right. as far as the choice, but I'll just say scripture is very true,
part,
and I know people have differences.
Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody would have done that.
Right, that's mm-hmm. true. As far as their religious beliefs, but I'll just say history has proven there's been killers since the beginning of time. So is someone going to say, well, because I'm predisposed to kill or I'm predisposed to like children versus adults, that it's okay. I'm in a loving relationship with this 8-year-old. So we are on a slippery slope while people say, oh, well, it's not going to really go. 20 years ago, we wouldn't be having this conversation. I'll say even when it comes to rights, homosexuals and lesbians were able to receive health benefits before a heterosexual couple who was married could mm-hmm. not get those benefits. But homosexuals were able to get those. So there's a little, slant or difference as far as the things that they have fought for as far as equality. But I just encourage all of us to just think that God does have a standard. There are a standard, and we have to be careful to not be in the period of the judges where everyone just does what's right in their own eyes. And that's where I see that we are headed.
And then also, I would just like to make note, too, when it comes down to orientation and proof, there is no scientific proof
Amen.
That people are, that we are born with a particular sexual orientation. And as far as when we're kids, children are attracted to everybody. You know, I mean, when you're a child and you're just going through the motions, you know, your body is experiencing things as a kid.
You sort out things,
but you can be attracted to both. Because, see, we're not talking about just gays and lesbians. You mentioned pedophiles. I can't remember which state, but there's a state. Well, now they want to be able to legally marry young boys. Then you have
bisexuals. Isn't there a big discussion about a pedophile and a homosexual, that there's some sort of difference there, that a pedophile is attracted to children is rather despicable. A homosexual is, that's a whole different ballgame or something.
Let me just toss out something here. There is a biological basis for so many things, because the Human Genome Project has been able to identify genes that are responsible for so many things. I suspect eventually there will be a gene that talks about your sexual orientation. Okay, they were able to identify a language gene. If that gene works one way, you have good, solid language. If it works another way, you have difficulty with language. The human family is so broad and so complex that we can't dismiss the possibility of biology being there for anything. And again, we'll talk numbers. And again, this comes from the mystery writer side of me. 1-3% of the population is psychopathic, which means they lack a conscience. It doesn't mean that 1-3% of the population are murderers, because most psychopaths are not murderers, because committing a murder would interfere with what they want to do, which is basically satisfy their own needs of whatever they are.
Of inflicting pain.
Right. So not necessarily inflicting pain, but doing what they want to do without regard for others. That's the mark of psychopathy.
Isn't that a sociopath? Sounds like selfishness to me.
But it goes beyond selfishness.
Isn't that a sociopath that they
Psychopath and sociopath are very close on the spectrum if you look at the professional literature. Now, the point I want to make, though, is that there may be a biological basis for, say, the psychopath who kills, I just feel I must kill, but that impinges on somebody else. There is no way that I have a gay neighbor who lives across the street. There's no way that if he decides to get married, that has an impact on my marriage unless, you know, I mean, it's like that has nothing to do with me. So it's not a threat. It's not a threat to me. And that's one thing that's never been explained. Now, the idea about somebody with children, those are all things that inflict injury on people who are not in a position to defend themselves. And people who argue that, oh, this is going to open the door to polygamy. No, it's not, because polygamy, by its very nature, as it's practiced in cults like Warren Jeffs, that's organized serial rape of 14-year-old girls. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it's, well, if gay people can get married, I can have
it
X number of wives.
It also signifies male dominance.
What that does is, I mean, it's gay marriage is not those things. It's not letting Warren Jeffs out of jail so he can have his 14-year-old bride surround him. Mm-hmm. It's
extending. But others would argue different with that, and I'm not one to promote or sanction someone marrying a minor, but there are cases where people have married, and I'll say in the South, people got married at 14 and 16 and have had 60 years of marriage.
Right.
One thing that we all have to be careful of, we are not the standard, and I know everyone doesn't believe in God, but I'll say my Heavenly Father does have a standard we as Americans once, I won't say completely embrace, but that's why we rose to be such a great power, because we did believe in some biblical or Christian principles, which our judicial system.
The basis for marriage mainly was because of property. That was essentially what marriage was all about. In most situations, because at that particular time in history, men had all the rights and were worried about who they were going to leave their wealth to, you know, what prodigy they would get it. So in order to do that, you had to hamstring women. That's the only way you would know who your children, or that you were the father of whatever child it was, when you married somebody. Yes. You either had to put a chastity belt on the woman, or you had to restrict them in some other kind of way. Hey, you know, she'd be out doing anything, and you wouldn't know who was really yours unless you had complete control over a woman's body.
Right.
And that was the only way that you
did
it. That was essentially about
marriage. Marriage has been dysfunctional in itself. Mm-hmm. And I will say, for going back to the time when, the children of Israel, you know, when they roamed the earth, you know, they had multiple wives. But to me, marriage in itself, going back to that sin nature, became dysfunctional at that point. My whole premise is this: And number one, I understand the scientific aspects of all this, but science in itself is a finite discipline, okay? Mm-hmm. You can only take it but so far. There's a certain point where it has to stop and it can't go any further. Science cannot determine the human soul. It can't. It can't study the human soul. It can't put it under a microscope. It can't do any
That's
of that.
A religious point of view.
Well, but the fact is, science, technically, science cannot, how can I say, study the human soul. We can study or try to attempt to study human nature and the human condition, but see, that's ever evolving. It's always evolving, you know. So all I'm saying is this. When it comes down to the reasons why it's important for same-sex marriages, I leave that alone, okay? That's everybody has a right to live. And everybody has a right to do what they want to do. That, again, religiously, God gave us a gift of choice, even when it comes to abortion, which is another hot topic. But everyone has a choice. My thing is, do not infringe on my choice to hold my standards, my biblical standards, by trying to force me to accommodate you.
Amen.
But Ronnie, by the another token, someone could say, how often has organized religion inflicted its point of views on others?
That's why I am not part of an organized religion. I have a relationship with the Lord. But as far as organized religion, that's a whole nother Jerry Springer show. And they need a whole lot of help. I don't believe in organized religion because they have done such a tremendous disservice to the people they were meant to serve. And like I said, that's a whole nother Jerry Springer show.
All religions are basically organized in one thing or another, whether you're Christian, Jews, Muslim, Hindus, or anything else.
The whole organized religion thing.
Don't get me on it either.
Let me say this. The fact that gays can marry in our culture at this point does not mean that we're on a downslide. It doesn't mean that we're facing any end times or anything like that. What we do have is choice. Now, if you have a bakery, and we'll use a bakery example,
somebody comes to you and says,
yeah, I'd like you to make a wedding cake. Hold on. The government says, basically, if you provide a service to the public, because you don't know when somebody comes in to order a cake, you know, it could be the cake I'm going to put poison in and murder my wife. Does that implicate me? No.
Right.
You don't know what that is. If you are a baker, you are certainly free to bake a cake, but not provide the wedding topper. You want a cake?
Exactly.
I can provide you the cake.
Yes.
You know, I don't have a same-sex wedding topper. If you want a same-sex wedding topper, you'll have to look someplace else.
Right.
You know, you can,
and
you can
I
provide
agree
the
with
cake.
That.
Mm-hmm. You can sell somebody the pizza. You can do all the stuff that you would do for the general public.
Yes.
Because the fact that some people are getting married.
Providing a public service.
I mean,
as a baker.
The idea that this is pushing us toward the end is almost like saying that God is only concerned about sex. And I wrote an article about this many years ago, that in America, the only sin is sexual sin. Now, we know that that's not true.
Exactly.
But that's the one we freak out about.
Well, that's the one that's on the forefront in public, you know, and made legal. But when you're talking about the bakery issue, I agree with you. Because there was another story I did not agree with when a pediatrician refused to care for a child because the child had two gay mothers. Mm-hmm. To me, I found that problematic. It didn't make sense to me.
Yes.
It did not make sense to me at all. Mm-hmm. But where we need to be able to draw these lines is when, because you know, a lot of these churches, organized churches, they have gay people attending these churches. Mm-hmm. Okay, the pastor should
think Catholic Church.
No, I'm
that's a whole other discussion.
No, not just a Catholic church. I'm talking about in Pentecostal churches, apostolic churches, Baptist churches. Mm-hmm. You know, they're on the down low, okay?
Sometimes.
But they're there. Mm-hmm. You know, predominantly in these churches, they pretty much stay on the down low. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is that for pastors, there should be some protections for pastors or ministries, like not-for-profit Christian ministries. Mm-hmm. So if they say, well, I can't marry you because
It's against my beliefs.
Right. Well, because the word of God says, you know.
But didn't they exempt religious things? I mean,
well, in New York State,
can't go into a church that because the minister won't marry you in his church. I think there are exemptions for religious reasons.
Generally, those are exemptions that, and people say, we got to protect the religious. I think, you know, if a minister says, I can't marry you.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You have no recourse. If I wanted to go out and get married right now, and a minister said, "I'm sorry, I can't marry you. I don't believe that this is a good marriage." Now, not you know, regardless of whether it's male, female, what have you,
right.
I don't believe it's a good marriage. I have no recourse but to find another minister.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't want to marry me, I don't want to take you to court to force you to marry me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to go to your church.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to come to my wedding. I mean, that sort of thing works out
right.
just fine. That's a live and let live kind of thing.
Exactly.
Again, it's not something that will people are not going to be embroiled in too many of these things because a lot of the panic stuff that comes up from conservative thought is intended to scare people. Well, they're going to take away your right to do blank or no, they're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
That has nothing to do with you. It has everything to do with, like I say, these friends. I think of two lesbian couples who are friends of mine. One, they've been together 40 years. Another, the woman passed away maybe 7-8 years ago. One of them. And they'd been together for a long time. All the survivor's friends, we were all very supportive of her and, you know, gave her places to come and talk and have meals and so forth. And it was a very difficult thing. They had a real relationship, went on for a long time. They were very much in love and very supportive of each other. And there is nothing anywhere that says they should have suffered this when if you stick to the strictest tenets of Christianity, Adolf Hitler can say, I repent of my sins and go to heaven.
Amazing Grace would be something like that. That wrote that.
John Newton, that's a whole other discussion.
But let me get to Ronnie. She wanted to, I promised her that we would spend some kind of subject on the fruit belt.
This was fun.
You know,
this was fun.
It just goes to show when you're running for something here, you can talk about anything. Not just that. You know, we can move all around the world on that type of thing. And again, this is going to be the last one. I will get to some of the local issues on this hour show. We had 2 or 3 hours. We could talk all night. But we don't. And I would ever say about the homosexual issue was this. I am not homophobic. I frankly don't care what you do in your house
exactly.
and in your bedroom. I really just don't care.
Right.
You know, I may, like some people may have a problem if you would say, wanted to make, get into sexual acts inside my church in one of the pews. That might be, that's a problem. You know, that's a problem.
All the cell phone cameras today.
That's a problem. You know, but
the thing is, Mary,
I frankly don't care.
Right,
in terms
exactly.
of making society better, it's not who you do, it's what you do.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And that's about it. And something else that I thought was really apropos, and we've had, and I understand that there, this past week, I believe, there was a rally in Buffalo in front of City Hall where a group of people who, they were people that supported public education
and they were out there parent teacher organization
it certainly was not Samuel Radford's group.
This was
another group, and they were really enraged that there was nothing mentioned, particularly in Buffalo News, over the insults and the terrible disparagement of the black women on the Buffalo Board of Education.
Actually, let me say that the Buffalo News has brought Carl Palladino to task on a couple things. They've called him on. I've read the editorial.
There was one, you know, not on the editorial page, in the front page of the news.
On the editorial page on a few occasions because that's my favorite section of the paper.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Palladino has been brought to task a few times on that page by the editors of the news. I don't know if there's a provision for getting somebody off, but the other thing is that also he's been brought to task numerous times in the news by Rod Watson.
Rod Watson.
And also by Don Esmond.
He's been on the show here.
So he doesn't get a total free pass for being an idiot.
Okay, I don't think he's an idiot. I think he's an flat-out racist bigot.
He's a bigot. He's bigoted against a lot of people for a lot of things. Yes.
Well, before we even started, him and I were talking about the fact that he is a misogynist. Mm-hmm. He's a chronic drunk.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't speak to that.
That does him in. He is masochistic. Mm-hmm. He has a deep, deep hate for anyone that's not like him. Mm-hmm. His thing is, and I believe this wholeheartedly, his whole purpose for being on that board is not about the students. It's not about better education. Mm-hmm. It's about real estate. Mm-hmm. Yes. Okay? At the end of the day, that's what it's about.
Good point.
It's a conflict of interest as big as Santa Claus's backside.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That is so true. And and I thought Barbara Nevergal has been writing some really good articles, scathing, in the Challenger that she has been writing. And I thought that was really something that should you know, go down. That was one reason why I was so attracted to Ronnie when she was running, is that she seemed to be like a voice, small voice, but was fighting out against entrenched power. And the thing that bothers me a lot, and maybe it's because of my left-leaning instincts, and I am a left, I'll admit that to anybody, but not necessarily color sometimes should judge what your politics are and who you should vote for.
Right. Exactly.
Because there's a lot of people that look like many people around this table.
Yes.
Who I wouldn't vote to be dog catcher.
Exactly.
Right. Or nor would I support.
Right.
And who I've been very disappointed in.
Yes.
Because their policies have nothing to do as an advocacy for African American or even working class values.
Right.
Yeah. None whatsoever.
Well, so you know the problem is with these
I thought
political
that Ronnie was doing
groups.
A good, because she seemed like the little ant going up against the giant.
Well, sure. You know, the whole thing is that it was like going back to biblical days, David and Goliath.
Yeah, well, you were certainly David.
When you are out there on your own, you know, you have to do what you have to do. Mm-hmm. But see, when you're talking about a system in itself that is so corrupt. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And anyone going in has to really have a strong constitution for as far as like not compromising their integrity. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, you know, it's not how you start, but it's how you finish. Mm-hmm. Many people can go in with all the good intentions in the world, but in order to cut those deals, you know, in order to get those legislative pieces in, compromise happens all the time. And also, when I think about it, and I'm not saying it like it's gospel.
Well, former President Johnson did on his toilet stool.
Well, you know what? But most of that stuff, most of these deals happen in bars. Mm-hmm. You know? So you've got drunken deals, okay, from drunken politicians from the bars. Okay? And it's true. You know, it's true. And there's so many other issues going on within it, you know, talking about sex. Oh, my goodness. It's politics is like Peyton Place, you know. But putting that aside.
Good friend of mine, she passed away now, Loretta Renford. And man, did she know more stuff about most politicians, but she could afford running. Well, and never mind talking about me.
Well, you know what the thing is that I tell people I grew up with a petition in my mouth and a gun on my hip because of my father, John Hemphill. I was raised up in that environment, you know, around politicians, union workers, especially law enforcement. Mm-hmm. That was my environment, so I'm comfortable there. And I don't have this awe of someone with a title because I know at the end of the day, we're all humans. Mm-hmm. I respect their position. I do. Except when I'm running against them. I respect their position, and I respect their office, but I know that they're people, too. You know, so I'm able to just be me whenever I'm in front of anybody. Mm-hmm. But the truth is the truth when you're talking about the political structure in the city. Oh. For instance, recently, it was in the Buffalo News that Locurdo, okay, the North District councilman, is taking a Erie County job. Mm-hmm. What's interesting about that is that they waited until all the petitions were collected and submitted and approved. So now they have an opportunity to fill that seat with whomever they want.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So we're looking at it. Well, my attorney's saying it was just downright fraud. Mm-hmm. You know, a political fraud is what he's saying it is. I don't know. Legally, he would know that. I wouldn't know that. But see, this is how Buffalo does business. And because of the fact, the way that the Democratic primary is set up, there's too many individuals getting in office who don't need to be in office. And so there has to be, when you're talking about politics, responsible responsible campaign finances. There has to be that in place. And then also we have to address the issue of how to make the general election more appeasing to the general public. And also those who don't make it on a Democratic ticket will have a chance to make it on the general, you know, in the general election.
Well, school board elections should certainly be tied. Should certainly
Most
be
people
held
don't
when,
vote.
When they don't. They should be when national
yes, they should be.
Elections are held. And I'm
yes.
a firm believer in that. You know,
yes, but we need to encourage more people to come out and vote, period, because there is this sense of hopelessness when it comes to the elections. Most people don't vote.
Right.
You know, and it's a shame. And it's usually the ones who
that need the help the most.
Yeah, who need help mm-hmm. the most, but they figure it wouldn't make a difference, mm-hmm. you know, if they vote or not, because mm-hmm. the same person will end up in office anyway.
Well, a lot of times that working class people, and this was a charge more or less leveled against white workers, and that is they don't vote their interest. You know, they get in there, and their interests are the same or should be akin or allied to the interests of black or brown workers, because we're all trying to get. The enemy of all of us is the man, quote street.
Yeah.
But, you know, you get
I
divided.
I met him, by the way. There were like five in a room.
Five in a room. So, you know, we sit down there and we, you know, we go through that type of thing. And I think a lot of times that has to be educated. As a union, a friend of mine often used to say to auto workers, you know, when we got auto workers with big incomes and they could live and they could do everything and they had all the different rights. And what the first thing they do, they all vote a Republican. Mm-hmm. You know, and hate unions. Well, folks, we only got about 2 minutes left in our program. I want to say I've enjoyed this program a great deal. I think it was very good. And I want to ask you off, you join me
Surprising
on a
topics.
Television show.
Yes.
You know, that we're going to be doing when we tape again for television. I want the three of you, I hope you'll join me on the set for that.
Sure.
But I want to give you each, you got about maybe less than a minute, you know, to come around the table and give some parting shots out to the audience. Since you got here last,
I shall be
Sydney,
first, and the first
yeah,
shall be last.
Yes, we'll let you go first.
Well, Ms. Mary Davis, I just want to say thank you again for this opportunity to come and to be on your program. And as I said last time, well, I'll say two things. Homosexuality isn't the only issue. I'll say shacking together, fornication, all those things are equally bad and showing the moral depravity of our society. But only what you do for Christ will last.
Coming from a religious point of view.
Yes.
Gary?
I just finished writing a new murder mystery. I don't know when it will be published. It's starting to make the rounds now. It's called Nickel City Blues, and it's the first in a series about Private Eye in Buffalo named Gideon Rhymes. Mm-hmm. And we don't have a good fictional Private Eye in Buffalo. So
that
I'm hoping to fill that gap.
And Miss Ronnie?
Well, like I said earlier, there were some very surprising topics, and I like the flow of conversation, especially when it's spontaneous. Miss Mary Davis has a way of doing that.
Yes, she does.
But I do appreciate it, and I would just like to say that I concur with Sydney, and also I would like to say that living in a world where there's so many so many questions, and we're sitting here trying to figure out the answers. It's important that we keep searching, and as long as we are interested in the questions, eventually we will find those answers. And it goes for everything from family, church, community, society, politics, all of that, because at the end of the day, it's about the human condition.
Oh, sorry. And I want to thank my guests for being my guests today. I'm your host, Mary Davis. Stay with the station throughout your day.
You've been listening to The Mary Davis Show. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Mary Davis, 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.